Hello and welcome to Blast Processing, the official podcast of PixelVerdict.com. This is your host, Steve. With me this week is the salt in my wound, the yin to my yang, the dark to my light side, Mr. John Mercer.
Welcome.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of this week's podcast, I figured I'd let our listeners know that we're experimenting with some new formats, some slight changes to our usual weekly progression as we draw ever closer to episode 100 and the new year and the eventual launching of dailyverdict.com. So, you know, we're playing around a little bit, so things might not be as they always are or always have been, but you know, we're trying some new things. Let us know what you think of them.
Yeah, don't be sad. Change is always good.
Stasis is good.
Equals death. Unless you're Sigourney Weaver.
Exactly. Stasis equals death unless you're Sigourney Weaver, in which case you get thawed out 87 years later and your cat's still alive.
Not your daughter, though.
No, your daughter's dead, but your cat's still A-okay. Cats are scary like that. I'm going to kick things off with an old feature that I thought was high time I resurrected. This is the rundown, our little bites of news from the past week or so in video game and gadget land. I'm going to kick it right off the get-go. The big doozy. The Uncharted movie, being directed by David O. Russell, also written by David O. Russell, the esteemed director who brought us Three Kings and I Heart Huckabees, I Didn't Heart Huckabees, is set to star Mark Wahlberg. Okay, Mark Wahlberg, yeah. I guess he kind of looks like Nathan Drake. He's maybe a little old, but okay. Joe Pesci as Uncle Drake. Bobby De Niro as Daddy Drake. What the F? Even worse, this little tidbit comes from the LA Times, from Mr. O. Russell himself. This idea really turns me on, that there's a family that's a force to be reckoned with in the world of international art and antiques. A family that deals with heads of state and heads of museums and metes out justice. We'll have the family dynamic, which we've done in a couple of movies now. And then you take that and put it on a bigger, more muscular stage of an international action picture, but also put all the character stuff in it. That's a really cool idea to me. John, is that a cool idea to you?
Oh, just more on that later. Just, I got a beer open right now. Let's just let the liquor stew in me for a little while, and I'll get back to that later.
I sincerely think that we should go with, you know, O'Russell has a bit of a reputation of having a bad temper.
Also being a fake Irishman.
And being a fake Irishman.
It's not David O'Russell. It's nothing like O'Leary or O'Hanrahan or...
It's just David.
Oh, my God. It's
middle initial Russell.
Yeah.
Why don't he just, you know, put his whole name there? What a pretentious tit.
Maybe it's something that, like, really, really embarrassing, like Ogilvy.
David Ogilvy Russell. David Obadiah Russell.
Yeah, like the only cool name that starts with O, I think, is Owen, and that's not even that cool.
It's a little cool. Yeah. Maybe. But, you know, I agree. I think we should hire someone to go to the set or go to his house or somewhere and beat up Mr. O. Russell. I wonder if George Clooney's available.
Give George Clooney the Duke, man. give him the original Xbox controller. This is what the gamers think of you, David.
Set him loose on Mr. O. Russell. Meanwhile, Microsoft has nothing to say about a Halo Reach-powered remake of Halo Combat Evolved that may or may not be in the works at 343 Industries, which may or may not come out in time for the 10th anniversary of that game, which may or may not have launched with what may have been the original Xbox, which might or might not have launched in November 2001, and may have been made by a company that could possibly, but not definitely, have been Microsoft. Sure. Canadian Hugo-winning sci-fi author and beater-upper of American customs agents, Peter Watts, will be writing the official adaptation of Crisis 2, dubbed Crisis Legion, coming in March 2011. You know, whatever. He wrote Homeland 2, or Homeworld 2. Homeworld 2 had a pretty cool story. I'm down. In the Name of the King 2, drops the Dungeon Seeds Association, stars Dolph Lundgren as Jason Statham's son, who gets warped to the future, grows up as a soldier, invents a time-traveling DeLorean, and goes back to the past, or something. Seriously. You can't make this stuff up. Uwe Boll is still directing, and no, the bandit is not playing the king this time.
Dolph Lundgren should play the king, too.
I think he should play everybody in the movie.
Yeah.
And it should all be shot like, you know, cinema verite style. I think Bol can handle that. Bol's a talented, capable, artistic director.
Like I said, I just opened the beer.
He's a talented, capable, autistic director. Sega announces Binary Domain, a shooter, squad-based third-person shooter, apparently, from the makers of Yakuza. It looks dumb. There are big guys with machine guns, there are terrible one-liners, and some crazy half-robot bitch with a baby. I think they're trying to pull a reverse Terminator. You know, the machines are the good guys, and the humans are the bad guys. They're the rebels. I don't know. Have you seen the trailer yet, John?
I have seen the trailer.
What did you think? Am I off base by thinking it looks like crap on a cracker?
I think it looked like Vanquish, and Vanquish really sucked.
I think it looked like Vanquish if Vanquish were made internally at Sega.
Oh! Oh! Zing!
An Inception video game is definitely coming, says Chris Nolan. Then again, Inception wasn't a real film. You dreamed it, just like you're dreaming this. Right now.
Yo, we put a dream inside your dream so you can dream while you dream.
You can dream that you're playing an Inception video game based on a movie that is not real, that you dreamed. Meanwhile, someone's trying to steal industrial secrets from you while you sleep. That was the whole point, wasn't it? I don't remember.
I think so, yes.
I was confused.
It was pretty awesome, but yeah, that was the whole point.
Deus Ex, Human Revolution, the augmented edition is announced. I don't know, I think myself and you are about the only people on the planet who are actually excited about this game. It's coming in February, it's going to have more crap in it, and it's hopefully going to be more the conspiracy and less Invisible War. But you know, everybody online is automatically dismissing it because Warren Spector is too busy making Mickey Mouse games for the Wii. Frank West has covered Wars, you know, and in December he'll be covering Dead Rising 2. Dead Rising Case West DLC should be hitting respective marketplace shoppes by Christmas. So I think it's Xbox and PS3. It might only be Xbox. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe I should have researched that better, hey?
I think they should have put Case West in the Red Dead Redemption Undead downloadable content. Because then it would have been a delightful pun as well.
Case West. EA is shying away from big purchases, according to John Riccatello, which pretty much rules out the purchase of Rock Band developer Harmonix. Incidentally, EA is also ruling out free coffee in the commissary, so no more caramel macchiato lattes for John Riccatello unless he pays for them. Damn it. Does anyone really care about the music game scene anymore? Like, is this the end of the, you know, the plastic instruments and rocking out with your friends renaissance?
Yeah, I think so, and I don't know what's going to happen to Harmonix after this. I was kind of like, are they going to go back to being one of those, you know, elite gamer curiosities? Like, I hear everyone telling me how awesome, what was it called, Frequency?
Amplitude.
Amplitude were, how awesome those two games were, despite, you know, I don't think they actually exist. I've never seen them.
I've played Frequency.
Yeah? Was it awesome?
Oh, not really.
Guitar Hero with a controller?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. You know, I don't know, it's... They've had their taste of success. They need to, you know, they need to evolve or die.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all there is to it.
Become a video game developer and not a music video game developer.
Exactly. Exactly. Infinity Blade, which is developed by Shadow Complex developers Chair Interactive, who are owned by Epic Mega Games or Epic, whatever they're calling themselves these days, hits the Apple App Store on December 9th. It looks as though it were crafted by Blackmagic and Baby Tears. Have you seen any screenshots on this thing?
I have not.
Have you seen any video of it in motion?
I have not.
Jesus wept.
Is that a good Jesus? Did Jesus weep for a good reason or a bad reason?
He wept tears of joy. This is an Unreal 3-powered medieval hack and slasher running on an iPhone or an iPod Touch.
You had me until you mentioned iPhone or iPod Touch.
Apple App Store. I guess you could play it on the iPad, too, if you feel so inclined. If you got, like, money to burn, you know, but if you have the money...
You could play it on the iPhone they made big enough for seniors.
I mean, if you have an iPad...
I can dial with my face.
If you actually own an iPad and you didn't get it with, like, a free Subaru Impreza, or you didn't get a free iPad with a Subaru Impreza, I should say...
You got a free Subaru Impreza with your iPad.
Yeah, it cost you, you know, $32,000, but they threw in a Subaru Impreza. You know, if you have an iPad, through purely through promotional means, that's great. If you actually went out and spent cash money on an iPad, sir, if I had your money, I would wipe my ass with my money.
And my iPad.
Rumor time. Uncharted is venturing to warmer climes for its third iteration. Uncharted 3 could be taking place in Egypt or North Africa. We will probably find out more in mid-December, either at the Spike Video Game Awards or very, very shortly after them, like within 24 hours of them.
Have we learned nothing from Resident Evil 5? The first time Nathan Drake pulls a gun on anyone, he's going to be a racist.
As if, like, blowing up Caribbean pirates in the original Uncharted wasn't racist enough.
No. Or, you know, pretty nearly exterminating the entire race of Sasquatches in Uncharted 2.
Yeah, I mean, he I'm amazed PETA didn't go after him for that one. Although, they weren't actually Sasquatches. Spoiler. The Xbox Live Rewards program is now live for some territories. Do things that cost money and get rewarded with a pittance of Xbox points, which can be exchanged for digital goods. Thank you, Microsoft. Your generosity knows no bounds. If I spend $60 to upgrade my freaking Xbox Live membership for a year, you're going to give me $2.50 that I can spend on one Rock Band song.
Make sure it's a good Rock Band song.
I don't understand the rationale. And people are happy about this? Where's our free online? Huh? Where's our free live? Jerks.
These are the same people who didn't, like, recognize the inherent evil of wager mode in Call of Duty bops.
Some more EA stuff. Battlefield Bad Company Vietnam has been confirmed to come out on December 21st, just in time for Ho-Ho. Break out the CCR and the pot, you draft-dodging hippie scum. It's multiplayer only. It's a few new maps. It's a whole crap load of Vietnam-era weaponry, including flamethrowers. And it's, I think, 60-odd licensed songs from the era. So, you know, maybe you can listen to some Blue Cheer while you get drafted. Should be fun. I'll be there.
Shipped out to this song. Semper Fi.
John Riccatello has played Dead Space 2 before you. He digs it. He digs it a lot. He says it's scarier. Alongside all the other good stuff and celebrities who don't know their Wiis from their Kinect immovables, there'll be something Gears of War related shown at this year's Spike Video Game Awards on December 11th. Apparently it's not going to be Gears of War 3, so hey, there you go. Maybe it's a new Kinect-based Gears of War game. And last but certainly not least, The Witcher 2 Assassin of Kings hits PC on May 17th. Yes, it's a PC game. They still make PC games. And we'll have standard and uber-expensive Super Purdy editions full of everything you can possibly think of. So, you know, if you want a statue or a bonus disc or an art book or a cloth map or a novel or a lock of Garrett the White Wolf's hair, a broadsword. Yeah, maybe there'll be a broadsword in there. Maybe there'll be like some kind of a ceramic death mask or something like this. I don't know. It looks like a pretty nice special edition. And I don't think it costs like $8,000. So it should be fun.
There'll be no remote control car, though.
No, it won't have a remote control car with a camera or a set of night vision goggles, because those things didn't exist in the Dark Ages, John.
No.
That would be anachronistic. It will, however, also be available on GOG.com or goodoldgames.com as a digital download, which makes sense because the guys who developed The Witcher also own goodoldgames.com. Console versions are still up in the air. Personally, I'd still like to see the aborted Rise of the White Wolf make a comeback, so us PS3 and 360 owners could, you know, play the original before we play the sequel. That's all we've got for news headlines this week. I'll get into our personal lives. John, what have you been playing this week?
Oh, God. Oh, God, what a week. What a horrible, abominable, monstrous, hideous, atrocious, lousy, icky, grievous, grim, ghastly, grody, and gross week I've had for gaming.
Do tell. Elaborate, please.
Three real stinkers.
Awesome.
Now, first up, as I mentioned on last week's podcast, if you could hear me over Blair, I played Splatterhouse, which was a lumbering brawler that could have, you know, it could have and it should have been a gruesome adventure that was one part Lovecraft and two parts Cuisinart. Instead, it was one part pre-1999 3D action game and two parts poop. I don't know what was worse. It was just, you know, they had these 2D action sequences that your character moves around like he's lugging a bag of cement. It's just, it was so slow and so tedious. And, you know, all the highly touted gore in the game. Basically, you punch enemies until they explode like a balloon full of chum. But every enemy's got some type of splatter kill, which is basically a grapple-initiated mini-game fatality. You know, a little quick time event. And it, I think there's 10 of them in the entire game. So after 6 hours, any gamer who wants more than just tediously pressing the square button over and over and over is going to see the same fatalities again and again and again.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Just a bad, bad beat 'em up. I mean, it worse than like Wolverine, X-Men Origins, and worse than God of War 3 and Dante's Inferno. It's one of those games is just bad. Just horrible. All this licensed heavy metal that feels like it was put in as an afterthought. And I mean, the Borderlands-inspired graphics, the game at times could look passable, but most of the time was just ugly as sin. It was, ugh.
Dirty, dirty game.
Yeah, dirty, dirty game. And I mean, this is something that took nearly 4 years to develop.
I just think
Splatterhouse was announced back in 2007.
I think it's a game that they didn't have any idea what they were doing with it.
No, and Namco were charged, I mean, $64.99 Canadian. What are the Americans paying for that now?
Probably $59.99.
Yeah, $59.99, but $64.99 Canadian. Now, I realize part of this is probably trying to recoup their development costs. I mean, it jumped from what did Bottle Rocket do again?
They did something.
Yeah, I forget what it was.
I know they've made games in the past.
And it was actually something half impressive, actually, or not impressive, but half big.
I don't remember. I don't recall.
Give me one second here. Wiki Magic. Oh, they made a bunch of web-based casual games. Mark of Cree.
That was those guys?
That was those guys.
Wow.
Well, yeah, the makers of Mark of Cree, and then it got taken away by Namco Bandai Internal and was given to the development team that made the equally ponderous Afro Samurai.
Oh, God.
Yeah. What was the name of that Weezer album? Maladroit? That's an apt description for Splatterhouse. Just lumbering, slow, and it's one of those ones, it throws out trophies and achievements like with rocket boosters on them. I was playing for an hour, and I think I got 10 or 12 achievements.
That's insane.
And without even looking for anything, it's just one of those games, you know, you punch your first guy, you get an achievement.
First blood.
Yeah, and it's like everyone was telling me, you know, how cool the voice acting was in it and how hilarious the terror mask was. And, you know, he was saying some stuff that was genuinely funny, but it was all going on while you were still fighting guys. And, you know, he calls out, like, little witty one-liners as you're doing fights, too. So while he's explaining part of the plot quite hilariously, then at the same time you got him like, oh, yeah, when one guy explodes in Kool-Aid Red.
Yeah, okay, just, so we pass on Splatterhouse.
Really, really badly put together. Like, I could not. It's one of those games you start playing and you're like, wow, I can't believe, you know, Namco, the guys who 15 years ago, you know, were the toast of the town. Back when the PS1 first launched, I mean, these guys were the great white hope. You know, the guys who released Tekken, Ridge Racer, all these great franchises. I cannot believe that they would just shuffle this out on the store shelves and for full price.
They did have two pretty solid games this fall, though.
Yeah.
They did have Majin and they did have Enslaved.
Yeah, and there you go. Majin, $39.99. Splatterhouse, $64.99.
Retarded.
Yes.
Just,
we're not winning a Humanitas.
No, not this week.
No. And after Splatterhouse, after Splatterhouse, I didn't want to buy into the hype. I mean, I review games for the paper. I review them for the site. Even though my reviews never go up on the site, I'm going to have to correct that in the future. I decided to sit down, and I played a double whammy of both Sonic Colors games.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Don't believe what any of the major websites are telling you about them. Stay away. Stay far, far away.
Well, generally, that's like whenever I see the Sega logo on something, unless it features President Crazy Bitch or President Crazy Bitch.
Or a smoke break button.
Or a smoke break button, I generally avoid anything with the Sega logo. Although,
especially avoid things with the Sonic logo on them.
Or also if it happens to be an RPG that features international super spies.
We won't get into that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, man, it was just bad, sloppy gameplay. You know, the DS game was just, you know, mediocre platformer. It felt like I was playing a Genesis game from 1996. Were they still making Genesis games in 96?
I have no idea.
94, at least.
94. We'll say 94.
Yeah. You know, it felt like I was playing... Okay, and everyone talks about, you know, they want the old-school type Sonic games again. It's the same problem with the Mega Man fans. These older games are so ingrained to them that there's no way it's going to live up. Anything that Sega releases with the Sonic name on it, it's just not going to be good enough for it.
See, I wasn't a Genesis owner, a Genesis loyalist. I didn't play...
Well, neither was I.
I didn't play a tankard of Genesis stuff, but I did play through the first three Sonic games. And I had the same problem with all three of them. The first two worlds or stages were the only fun levels in the games.
And then after that, it's just tedious, bad platforming.
Yeah. Yeah. And frustrating, difficult, annoying, you know, like... And, well, of course, I also had to contend with the Genesis sound chip. Oh.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just... And on the... when the Sonic games went to 3D, I mean, I can still remember people going crazy about Sonic Adventure.
I never spent enough time with it.
It was bad. There was nothing great about it.
I do recall that when it...
It certainly wasn't playable.
I do recall that when they released it for Xbox Live Arcade and PSN, it got hammered. And I don't think it was, like, a bad port or anything. I think it was
just... And you want to know something? Listen, I'm not the biggest Mario 64 fan out there. But if your Mario 64 popped... I mean, if they reviewed that when that hit Virtual Console, I really don't think that was going to... That'd be ripped to shreds in the same manner.
No. There's a certain degree of respect for Mario 64.
Yeah. I mean, it's not my favorite Mario game, but, you know, it was a playable platformer. Sonic Adventure was not.
And yet it was considered, like, one of the three games to buy at launch for the Dreamcast.
Exactly.
Strange.
But yeah, Sonic Colors, same problem. And you know, it's just, he's completely uncontrollable. In the 2D sections, he's way too slippery. Way too hard. They got no sense. Even the old Genesis games, man, it still had that little sense of inertia. You know, he was still slow starting off.
Yeah.
Only built up speed the further you went.
Yep. He could also stop pretty quick, too.
Yeah, he could stop pretty quick, right? Mm-hmm. You still had that little degree of control. You know, Sonic Team knew what they were doing, and they did create a platformer that controlled differently than Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Which nobody else was really doing at the time. But, and nowadays, like, he takes off like grease lightning with the slightest touch of the controller. So in the 2D segments, you're falling down pits constantly. And in the 3D sections, you've got no control whatsoever. It's like trying to steer a bathtub.
Ouch.
He starts going fast, and all of a sudden you got a turn upcoming, and you just slam into the wall and spend 30 seconds trying to spin the camera around to see where you got to go again.
So do you think that maybe the reason they've been getting warmer receptions, like between Sonic Colors and Sonic 4, the reason they've been getting warmer receptions is because they're just not as bad as, like, Sonic the Adventure for 360 PS3 or Sonic Unleashed?
Yeah, they're not as bad, but they're still nowhere near good.
Would you use the Titanic analogy?
Yeah, I probably would, actually.
You know, it's a great big giant ship heading towards an iceberg, and they're trying to turn around, but it takes a really long time to turn around a great big ship.
Yeah, well, listen, I gave the same piece of advice to Sega last week, and I realize no one from Sega's listening to this. But if they do, guys, just leave it alone. You're trying to recreate a game that was past it's 18 years past its expiry date. Let it go. Just let it fade away. You know, I had one of the guys talking to me the week saying how, you know, how hard Sonic fans are to deal with. They whine when they're given what they wanted, and they ruin everything with crappy fan art. Just leave it alone. You know, there's a reason Sega aren't a first party anymore.
Because they make bad decisions and worse games.
Yes, there we go.
And if Sega was listening, they're never going to listen again.
Yeah. And after that, after those three, you know what, for the rest of the week, I got Epic Mickey out there that I'm reviewing for next week. I'm really not looking forward to it.
I've heard really good things about Epic Mickey, actually.
Yeah?
I've heard that...
I think it's just, it's been this, you know, everyone was talking about how late fall of 2010 was the year of the platformer again. I just think after all of what I've played, I don't want to play another platformer. I want to go back to Borderlands. I want to go back to Pandora and blow up Skeggs.
I heard from someone who meant it in the best way humanly possible that Epic Mickey harkens back to the golden days of the Nintendo 64. Now, that didn't instill me with a whole lot of confidence. You know, I was kind of like,
I didn't buy a Nintendo 64.
The golden days of the Nintendo 64, so it plays like pee. But no, I am.
You know what that puts in my head?
What's that?
Everyone seems to love Banjo-Kazooie. it goes to my head to hear, go to this place and bring me back 10 red coins.
Then you can go here.
And get me 10 more red coins, only this time you're in the snow.
But yeah, no, it's I've heard it compared in a very favorable light from someone who is a big Nintendo 64 fanboy that it is, you know. Well, I can't even say that. That's a little harsh. I can't even say he's a big Nintendo 64 fanboy. I don't know him well enough to make that criticism. But from someone who enjoyed their time with the Nintendo 64, they said that the game harkens back to, you know, their fun times with the N64. So maybe it's a good game. Maybe it is. Maybe
how old is this person?
This person is in their 20s.
Okay, so they were a child during the days of the N64.
I guess. Yeah. I guess, yeah. But, you know, like, I can respect that opinion. Coming from this particular person who... I don't even know why I'm keeping him anonymous. It's a Jonathan over at the other store. Coming from this guy, you know, he's a pretty cool cat. He's got a level head on him when it comes to games. He doesn't seem to be one of these console militants, zealots, you know. Like, he's not going to throw himself on Nintendo's sword or anything. So, you know, coming from him, you know, he's played about, I think he said about 6 or 7 hours of it, and he really enjoyed it. He was having a lot of fun with it. So, you know, it could be, you know, a great platformer.
If I open that up later tonight and start playing it, and it's great, I'll eat crow next week. I really will. I'll tell everyone that it was a good game and I was wrong. But I just, honestly, I'm really not looking forward to it.
There you go. I kind of stepped back and I can't even say I slowed down this week. I just kind of played two games and only two games, but I played a lot of both of those games. I did dig into the PC version of Two Worlds 2 after disconnecting from the Xbox version. I discovered that my laptop has a HDMI port, so I plugged that sucker into my 50-inch television and used a wireless sensor for an Xbox 360 controller and played Two Worlds 2 for 6 or 7 hours.
Something wrong with you.
It's so much fun.
Is it better on the PC than on the Xbox 360?
It did certainly look a little bit nicer. But in terms of gameplay, I mean, both experiences were virtually identical. I mean, especially considering I was sitting there playing it with an Xbox 360 controller, you know? I hope to have the PS3 version tomorrow and dig into that sucker. But we'll see what happens. We'll see how it goes. Delivery dates being accurate as they are from with a product shipping from Germany. So, you know, it may show up tomorrow. It was supposed to show up today. I was a little saddened. But I have my laptop, I have my...
It took some extra time showing them how to say goodbye in Germany.
Yeah, that's what it was. But, you know, I got my laptop, I got my digital download, so I'm okay, I'm content. I do have a copy of Two Worlds 2 that I can play, so, you know, I'm satisfied. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I got into it last week a little bit, but, I mean, just to reiterate again, this is a team that went from absolutely nothing and created, you know, what is essentially a bargain-based product with the original Two Worlds, and for some reason or another, it got foisted on a worldwide market at full retail price and still managed to sell over 500,000 copies. So, you know, kudos to them for that. They had a technically gimped game that still appealed to people. Hell, I still pumped 60 hours into it because I'm insane. And this game is a drastic improvement in every way. You know, like, I'm working on a review now, but it is, you know, for all intents and purposes, they whatever issues they had with the first one were addressed. You know, like, they were definitely conscious of people's thoughts. They were definitely aware of the critiques being leveled against the game when it came out. And they addressed those critiques. They went in and they, you know, they worked to make a better game, and they damn well succeeded as far as I'm concerned. The only other thing I got into was a little bit of DLC for Red Dead Redemption. I did buy and I did start messing around with the Undead Nightmare.
And how is that?
So far, it's a hoot and a half.
Because I love, like everyone else last year, earlier this year, I loved Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, Red Dead Redemption is an amazing. I mean, right now I'm calling it. I mean, we're into December now. There's nothing left to come out this year. I'm calling it right now. Red Dead Redemption is my game of the year. It's my number one. It is slot number uno. Nothing else this year has come close to reaching the degree that game pulled me in. Just the level of quality in the writing and the design.
It was like, you know, you were playing. It's like the only way this game can get any better is with zombies.
Yeah, and now I mean, there. You know. And not only that, like, not only do they throw zombies in there, but they go, like, five better than that. It's a single-player campaign. There's a full storyline to it. It's all fully voice-acted. It's not just, you know...
Are you still John Marston?
Oh, you're still John Marston, and it takes place... I don't want to spoil too much, but it takes place, I guess, between the three-quarter mark and the end game of Red Dead Redemption.
Does that mean there's no more Mrs. McFarlane?
Oh, no. Well, actually, I'm not entirely sure. I haven't seen her yet. But that doesn't mean she's not in there. But it seems like they're bringing back all the characters in some way, shape, or form. And so far, like, I've been told that there's a pretty hilarious bit with Seth, who was the guy who worked in the graveyard behind the church near Armadillo in the original.
I would laugh so much if the cure for the zombie plague actually turns out to be the stuff the carpetbagger was selling. if his cure-all actually works.
Or if that's what caused it.
Yeah, there you go.
Either way, that'd be awesome. But yeah, so far, it's been really good. Like, the opening cutscene is actually, you know, like, I mean, they play it straight. There is some humor in there, for sure. There's definitely a bit of humor to the situation.
It's Rockstar. There's humor in everything.
Yeah, but at the same time, they really play it straight. Like, Marston has no freaking idea what's going on, you know? And, like, they kind of play up the zombie movie cliches and stuff, too, you know? Like, the real... He is genuinely shocked and stuff as to what's going on. It's pretty fun.
Nice. Very nice.
I've been digging it. I think that's about it for me. I don't think I played anything else. I've been wanting to dig back into Battlefield Bad Company 2, but my copy is not on my shelf. I don't know where it is. Alas.
Gotta get that back for Battlefield Nom.
I do. I got my draft card yesterday. I'm shipping out on December 21st.
You gotta warm up the blue cheer.
Break up my blue cheer vinyl.
Because God knows we can't pay. God knows we can't afford the Led Zeppelin vinyl.
No. Collector prices, man.
No more Gran Turismo this week?
I didn't get very heavy into Gran Turismo this week, alas. No. I just kind of, Two Worlds 2 kind of sucked me in, and it kind of stole my soul for a bit. I sat down and watched a few movies with my other half, and Sunday evening I dug into the Undead Nightmare while John Dre was here. We both got a really good laugh out of that. But, yeah, that was about it for me.
Sweet.
I know... We talked a little bit earlier about Uncharted and how it's being adapted into what's sure to be a phenomenal piece of blockbuster entertainment. And I think, John, you had a little bit of a reading in mind?
Yeah, I thought we'd take a few minutes, ladies and germs, to just talk about movie adaptations of games. I mean, if you haven't heard already, then you just walked into the room because we were talking about it already. Polarizing film director and amateur cage fighter David O. Russell spoke to the LA Times about his vision of the Uncharted movie. You don't mind, Steve, if I quickly recap that again?
Go for it.
This idea really turns me on that there's a family that's a force to be reckoned with in the world of international art and antiquities. A family that deals with heads of state and heads of museums and metes out justice. We'll have the family dynamic, which we've done in a couple of movies now, and then you take that and put it on the bigger, more muscular stage of an international action picture, but also put all the character stuff in it. That's a really cool idea to me. Let me be the first to say here, wow, that sounds great, David. A family that answers the call of museum curators and world's leaders and deals out steaming dollops of treasure-flavored justice and a rich history sauce. You know something? That would make a really killer new chapter in Nicolas Cage's immortal National Treasure franchise. The only problem I got with it, it's not quite Uncharted. You know, it's really nothing like the multi-million-selling, critical darling, Game of the Year award-winning series that captivated gamers and critics alike. The game series that pretty much cemented the Spike Video Game Award show as one of the places to showcase a big reveal trailer. I think it was the Uncharted 2 trailer that kind of kicked that whole idea off.
It could have been.
Yeah, kind of made that into the into another E3.
A little mini E3.
Yeah. I realize that some aspects of a game are going to get lost in the translation to the screen. I realize that changes had to be made to sell what was a stunning game concept to a mainstream movie audience. But Uncharted? I mean, let's take a look at the story of Uncharted. A perpetually down-on-his-luck treasure hunter seeks fortune and glory by tracking down some of the greatest mystical shinies in the history of our species. Nathan Drake is Indiana Jones and Han Solo rolled into one. A lovable rogue with a heart of gold who tries to do what's right, but has his own flaws and foibles, and always, you know, gets caught up with either he or his different contacts he meets underworld connections. Amy Hennig wrote what was pretty much the best Indiana Jones game ever. And these egomaniacs are just going to throw that golden egg to the wayside. If there ever was proof that the rest of the world is insane, that they just don't get an easy concept like video games, if you're looking for proof on that, it's the movie adaptations. Now, you know what I'm talking about, Steve-O. You got anything to say about that?
It frustrates me to no end. I mean, you've got a game like Uncharted or Uncharted 2. More the first one. I'll stick with Uncharted to start, because that storyline was just, it was a riveting, action-packed storyline. I mean, it had character, it had plot developments, there was a healthy amount of cutscenes that kept the story moving, and then you had a few action set pieces, you know, like, there was stuff. It basically was structured like a movie with additional padding. You know,
exactly.
Like, all you had to do was excise that padding, go with that storyline, and
trim down some of the action sequences to a
manageable level. Get a decent action director who knows his way around the camera and an awesome stunt coordinator. Rent out some fucking hotel space in the Bahamas somewhere or in Hawaii. And there's your movie. There's
shit
Uncharted.
Shit ton of gasoline, too.
Yeah, you know, gasoline bombs, fuel bombs, that's a necessity, and some pyrotechnics, you know. But you have, you know, okay, 5-minute opening sequence. You got your action sequence on the barge. Complete with jet skis and little Mad Max-looking put-together pirate boats and some gunfights, you know, before you get your credits.
Then when they open the casket they've dredged up, there's your title sequence.
Yeah, I mean, it's so simple. And it is a movie that is, it's there, it's right in front of you, it's already written, it's pure simplicity. And yet you take everything and you chuck it. And I mean, okay, fine.
Let's not even call it chucking it, dude. You flush it.
Yeah, you piss all over it, then you flush it.
Yeah.
You know, it frustrates me that someone like David O. Russell gets hired to make this movie in the first place. David O. Russell wouldn't know which way to hold a PlayStation 3 controller.
Bet you David O. Russell knows how to hold a cocaine straw.
He sure as hell knows how to hold a fist.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
Ask Lily Tomlin if he knows how to hold a fist.
Yeah, exactly. Ask Lily Tomlin if he hits like a girl. I know that trash can certainly felt it. But it frustrates me to no end, because you had this guy, I mean, and one of the earlier choice quotes, the moment I knew this movie was in trouble, it was before all the Wahlberg and Robert De Niro nonsense. There was a quote from O. Russell saying, basically, we're writing the script, and based on what I've seen of the game, there's not really much there to go on, so I can pretty much go crazy. It was something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, it was to that effect. He could basically go nuts because there wasn't much there to draw on to begin with.
You, sir, are an idiot.
Yeah, you are, I mean, it's just like saying Raiders of the Lost Ark doesn't have much to draw on, you know? You need much to draw on. International treasure hunters looking for treasure. Action ensues.
Plucky female journalist.
Plucky female journalist.
And she was the very definition of pluck.
Pluck.
That was a better. There was more chemistry between two game characters than I've seen in 10 years of Hollywood action pictures.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just Fool's Gold was practically an Uncharted movie. You know? And no, I don't want David O. Russell to remake Fool's Gold. Fool's Gold was fine as disposable entertainment. But, I mean, Uncharted would be... I mean, let's face it. It would be disposable entertainment. Uncharted would be Sahara, or, you know, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, or Fool's Gold. It wouldn't be what David O. Russell seems to think that he's making, you know? I think he thinks he's making a National Treasure sequel, and that just frustrates the hell out of me.
And, you know, I like Mark Wahlberg just as much as the next guy, okay? When Mark Wahlberg is in a role that suits him, I like it. Mark Wahlberg is not Nathan Drake.
Mark Wahlberg looks a little like Nathan Drake, and he's good buddies with David O. Russell.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you cast Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci in this movie, we know who's going to be getting, you know, all the choice. All the choice bits are going to be going to Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
You know, all the real... They're going to be scene stealers. They're going to be scenery chewers, and that's just how it's going to go. You know, like
you're going to have Joe Pesci hamming it up with a gold tooth and a cigar in his mouth.
Yeah,
yeah. And you're going to have De Niro traipsing around 50 pounds overweight in a goddamn Hawaiian shirt,
doing Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing in this movie. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know. Yeah. I got no motivation. I'm Mr. Drake. I'm stealing treasure.
I'm
meeting out justice to museum curators. What the hell?
Meeting out justice for museum curators.
What the hell does that even mean? Doling out justice or
meeting out? Yeah, who's going to stop the Thule Society if not the museum?
If not Nathan Drake and Sons.
Yeah, who's? It's just it drives me insane.
I don't understand. The concept was there. And like you said, Drake himself, I mean, he's not just an Indiana Jones clone. Yes, he's an Indiana Jones and Han Solo clone. He's that lovable rogue. But he's got that mean streak as well. You know, he's got that, you know, that Snake Plissken side to him.
I still love, man, I think it was the commercial for the first game when he's sneaking up behind the guy and his walkie-talkie goes off.
Yeah.
Somebody just said, Drake, and starts saying something to him. The guard turns around. He throws the walkie-talkie at him, says, it's for you, and then shoots him.
There's your action beat.
The guy is the perfect action-adventure stereotype.
And you had some great characters in the first one, man. You had Drake and Elena and Sully and...
Great villains, man.
Yeah.
Navarro and... what was the other guy's name? The Englishman?
I can't remember the Englishman.
Gabriel Roman.
Roman, yeah, that's right, Roman. And you had, of course, Eddie Raja, who was just completely badass.
Exactly.
And, I don't understand.
For the money you were going to pay for Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro, and Mark Wahlberg, you could have cast the entire movie and had money left over for more explosives.
I mean, you can't tell me Chris Evans is not going to be done filming Captain America by the time this thing goes in front of a camera.
You can't tell me Chris Evans hasn't played Uncharted.
Come on.
What about Captain Kirk? What about
Come
Chris
on,
Pine?
You know.
What about Chris Pine? He was busy.
Yeah.
Even to a less extent, I know you don't like him. Even to a less extent, if you wanted to go a little tiny bit older, you know, what's wrong with Bradley Cooper? What's wrong with
Bradley Cooper smiles too much?
What's wrong with Ryan Reynolds?
Ryan Reynolds, yeah, I can get behind Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, but I mean, like that's just saying if you want to go a little bit older than Chris Pine or Chris Evans, right?
Chris Evans is on a hot streak right now.
Incredible hot streak. More of a hot streak than Mark Wahlberg's been on in 10 years.
Or Robert De Niro. You know, like, these guys would have been fine. Okay, Chris Evans as Nathan Drake. Jewel State to get the geek fanboys up in an uproar. The chick who played Kaylee in Firefly. Elena Fisher.
You're not getting Nathan Fillion, but hey, here's someone from Firefly.
Yeah, and they're even age appropriate. They're only a year apart in age.
Exactly.
You know, why not? Why the hell not? They'd make a great couple. Victor Sullivan would be a little harder, but hell, get the guy who does his voice in the video game.
What, Victor Sullivan would be a little bit harder?
He might be.
Not entirely. I'm pretty sure
Humphrey Bogart is dead. Sorry, John.
God damn it.
He died a long time ago, John.
Listen, with the money they're going to spend on De Niro, they could build a time machine, go back to 1940.
They could build a time-traveling DeLorean. It's just, and okay, this, the conversation we are having right now goes, and I mean, you guys might think we're off on a tangent, but this only proves our point. This proves beyond any reasonable doubt that David O. Russell and whoever it was who directed Max Payne and Uwe Boll,
Evie Arad,
all of these guys should not be making video game movies. Period. Full stop. End of story. They need a director who plays these games, who is passionate about these games, and who
I'm not even going to say Paul Anderson.
No, Paul Anderson, his heart's in the right place. Paul Anderson is a gamer. Paul Anderson played the Resident Evil games, but Paul Anderson also knows that in order to bring a game to the screen, you have to make concessions. And in Resident Evil, what he tried to do was he tried to make those concessions while not writing out what happened in the games. He didn't want to completely dismiss the fans of the video game series, but at the same time,
I don't think he really dismissed them at all.
No, okay. He didn't.
Resident Evil, their first movie. Zombies, Umbrella Corporation, so you had Mansion. Conspiracies and everything there. Mansion and Secret Laboratory.
Yes. It was all there. I mean, but the whole thing is, with Anderson, I mean, and you got to look at the material he's drawing from. He's drawing from Resident Evil. If you made a direct adaptation of Resident Evil, it would have been laughably horrible. You know, it would have been one of the worst movies ever conceived. Look at how Tekken turned out.
PC 2 proudly presents.
Look at how Tekken turned out.
Yeah.
Look at how awful Tekken was. Tekken was a pretty hardcore adaptation. Look at Dead or Alive. Dead or Alive was a flawless adaptation of the game, and look how horrible that movie was.
Yet I'm the same person who would talk about if they were going to make a proper Street Fighter movie. But the only way to make a proper Street Fighter movie is just make it a hardcore martial arts tournament.
Exactly.
All you got to do is, listen, refilm frame for frame Bloodsport and change the characters' names.
But I mean, like, Uncharted could work as a movie. And I was listening to a podcast earlier this evening, actually. I was listening to Irrational Interviews. It's Ken Levine from Irrational Games. It's his little podcast.
Was that when he was talking to Mr. Zack Snyder?
He was talking to Mr. Zack Snyder, who was awesome. And, I mean, they talk about how he and Gore Verbinski were trying to work on the Bioshock movie and everything kind of fell apart. And Snyder said it, and like he nailed it. It's exactly the same way I feel. And like I just said, you need people who are passionate about the source material. You look at Snyder with, I mean, you can say what you want about Snyder. I mean, people love to use Snyder as their whipping boy. But 300 was an amazing movie.
People used to love using Ridley Scott as a whipping boy.
Well, this is true. This is exactly it. The Watchmen was the best movie of 2009. I don't care what you say. I don't care what anybody says. The Watchmen, in its director's cut form, was the single best film of 2009. Period. Full stop. That adaptation was brilliant. And this is because it was handled by a guy who was immensely passionate about the source material. Snyder's not a video game geek. Snyder shouldn't be handling video game movies. But Snyder is a huge comic book geek. Snyder was a huge Watchmen fan. He's huge Frank Miller fan.
And with The Watchmen, though, too, with 300, he again realized there had to be concessions.
He knew what would work and what wouldn't work, and he made those changes accordingly. And he was incredibly both humble and honest about it. You know, like, he knew what wouldn't work and changed it accordingly. He didn't make any apologies for it, but he said, look, I'm really sorry, but this is not going to work. I've got to do it this way.
Yeah. Giant space alien. You know, giant biologically engineered space squid.
Too random. You know, it just doesn't get across the message.
You've got to introduce 20 minutes worth of, what's the word I'm talking about? The thing I always hate in movies, exposition.
Exposition, yeah.
20 minutes worth of crappy exposition and a whole ton of little extra characters who only need to be there for a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
when you've got Dr. Manhattan walking around the entire movie.
Yeah, I mean, this is how it has to be done. I mean, there are games out there that would make kick-ass movies, Uncharted being key among them. Uncharted would be just a damn fun ride, you know?
I even think, in people's right hands, Dead Space would make a great movie.
Dead Space would make an awesome movie. Kane and Lynch would make an incredible freaking movie. Incredible.
Just not with Willis and Jamie Foxx.
No, not with Bruce Willis and Jamie Foxx. Anybody but Bruce Willis and Jamie Foxx. Now, apparently that movie's not happening anymore anyway, so, you know, that's all fine and dandy. But it would make a great crime flick. It would make an awesome crime thriller, you know?
Yep.
In the right hands. You know, give it to someone like Michael Mann, who was basically the inspiration for the game anyway.
Yeah, see, the thing is, Michael Mann's probably not a gamer. They'd hand Michael Mann the controller and say, hey, this is just like Heat. I didn't want to come over to my place and watch Heat.
And like, there are others. There are games with huge mythologies that could be drawn on. Halo would still make a fantastic movie. Because there's so much there you can draw on to make it an awesome movie and still stay true to that game, you know?
Killzone. Like, Killzone would be a great movie.
Killzone would be a... Well, I mean, Killzone would make a slightly lower rent movie than Halo, but, you know, it would still make an awesome movie.
Yeah.
You know? It's just... adaptations make me crazy.
Taking the game and fundamentally changing everything about it and then dismissing it as saying there wasn't anything really there so I can just go hog wild with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a guy, this is a neophyte. This is a guy who's never touched a controller and played Uncharted.
And this is just the type of people are going to tell me I'm overreacting. I'm going to put it like this to my comic buddies, okay? Listen, Uncharted is a big deal now in gaming. It is.
Uncharted is, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Uncharted is the best new franchise of this generation.
Yeah.
You know?
Halo was a huge deal in gaming. Imagine if Zack Snyder decided, and he's probably not going to do this, because like you said, Snyder's a comic book geek, but imagine if Zack Snyder came out and said, yeah, I'm directing the new Superman movie, but I'm going to fundamentally change everything about the Man of Steel, because really, there's not a whole lot there for me to draw off of.
You know, I'm going to take Superman, I'm going to set it in medieval Rome, and Superman's going to be a Roman...
And instead of being an alien, he's actually going to be made of steel.
Yeah.
he's going to be a Greek father.
Yeah. It's just, oh, it makes me so angry.
Yeah, and book fans know what I'm talking about.
They should.
Yeah.
They've been crapped on enough.
Exactly.
It's just, but I mean, again, like, with books, it's a little different because... Literature as an art form is so subjective anyway. You know, people have just, like, every individual reader has a different image in his head of what he's reading. You know, like, words are interpreted so vastly differently by each individual that, you know, you sit down and read, two people sit down and read The Stand by Stephen King, for example, and they might both, like, their internal visualization of what they've been reading is completely different, you know? It might be absolutely completely different from person to person. So, I mean, you got to kind of strike that happy medium, I guess, where you get all the main beats and hopefully do the book justice. And, I mean, in some cases that happens. I know people don't really particularly enjoy the movies or anything, but The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons were solid adaptations of those novels. They trimmed the fat. They got to the point. They didn't change anything. Lord of the Rings, of course, is the big one. Lord of the Rings was... a pretty solid adaptation. The only time it ever stumbled was when Jackson invented new material for it. You know, that was his stumbling block. But, I mean, for more or less, fans of Lord of the Rings as a book should be pretty pleased with those adaptations, with those movies. But it's just...
Fans of Uncharted are not going to be as pleased.
Yeah, I mean, when you sit down and play a video game, I mean, especially a game like Uncharted that's so cinematic and only one step removed from movies anyway... You know, like, I mean, you're essentially playing an interactive movie with 20-minute-long fight sequences. It doesn't make any sense to go in and cut pieces out en masse and then, you know, cobble together some whole new creation and just take the names from the game and paste them in there. I mean, it's not like... I don't know, it's
What is it? Is this the early 90s?
Yeah, it's not like Call of Duty or something, you know?
Yeah.
Where you don't really have much of a storyline anyway.
But for a long time, it was a long time before comic book movies started being made with any degree of respect, right?
It really was.
And unfortunately, I got the feeling that gamers are in for that sort of weight.
I think so.
Yeah. Before we move on to our final segment, though, Steve, I got a quick question for you.
Sure, sack it to me.
That'd be a bit of fun. Maybe we can get some of our listeners to possibly throw up their ideas on the forums at the verdict.
Sure.
What if you could take any game you would like to see made into a movie and give it to a director? Who would you like to see make your game movie?
My game movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
I already got mine right here. I can start off.
You go first. You go first.
Okay, this is going to be a little bit obscure. I would like to see Masahiro Ando. That's the animation director. maker of Sword of the Stranger. Any of our listeners haven't seen that, go see it. Best animated movie I have ever seen.
Agreed.
Thing blows, and I like some of Miyazaki's work. This guy blows Miyazaki out of the water. It blows Pixar out of the water. Just Sword of the Stranger is one of those animated movies that you forget is animated. Beautifully, beautifully. It feels like something Leone would have made.
It is awesome. Like, the action is just so amazingly kinetic.
I would like to see Masahiro Ando do Shadow of the Colossus.
Ooh. That's interesting.
It is interesting, because you're taking a game that's got almost no dialogue, very simplistic storyline, but you give it to somebody with a little bit of vision.
See what comes of it.
Yeah, I think he could knock that out of the park. For the two people out there who haven't ever played Shadow of the Colossus, Shadow of the Colossus is about a young warrior. He might be a prince, we don't know. Brings the body of his deceased lover across a border he's not supposed to cross into a forgotten land, a forsaken land, and is promised by an unseen force that if he can slay 16 mighty beasts that are roaming around this countryside, his love will be brought back to life.
It's an awesome story.
That's a great fairy tale story right there, and I'd like to see the guy who did Sword of the Stranger take that.
Would you want to see it animated, or would you want to see it, like, say, CG animated, or would you say live action?
I'd say do the same deal as Sword of the Stranger. Just take that really nice rotoscoped
old school animation.
Use a little bit of CG where you can on the backgrounds and that, just to give stuff like cool looking movement in that.
Yep.
You know, like maybe you could do the Colossi in CG or something.
Gotcha.
All right. I mean, I've pretty much figured that's how they do it. Anyway, they create a 3D model and then rotoscope over it.
Probably, yeah. I think they do. I know it is all done digitally these days.
Yeah.
And I know they use mocap, so performance capture, whatever they call it, this week.
Kind of like that really sweet Korean animated movie came out in 2003.
Sky Blue.
Sky Blue, yeah.
Or Wonderful Days.
Yeah, that was. I still love the whole mashing of 3D models and animation that made that movie.
Stunning looking movie.
Yeah, that was another great animated movie.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I think I've got one.
Yeah, go ahead.
James Cameron.
Yes.
Mass Effect.
Director of Avatar. Master Thespian.
Mass Effect.
Mass Effect, nice.
Mass Effect by James Cameron. That first game, just the story arc and everything for the first game is phenomenal from start to finish. Like, I mean, I mean, Mass Effect 2, amazing game in its own right, but the first one is just pure triumph as far as I'm concerned from a narrative standpoint. Like, from the storyline that was told, it was just awesome. And I think Cameron, like, I mean, it had those epic action sequences, you know, hundreds of ships fighting each other. No one does an action sequence like Cameron. Nobody. I don't care who you are. Like, it's the guy.
Nobody handles scale. Like Jim Cameron.
I mean, you know, you can say what you like about Avatar or about Titanic or whatever, but Cameron does spectacle, and he does it better than anyone else in the business. He does it with more intelligence and thought than Michael Bay does. He does it with more technical skill than Spielberg or Lucas. You know, he is the quintessential action director. He's not my favorite director, but, you know, he's the man when it comes to science fiction
and
action.
You know what I say about people with his storylines and that, too? I don't think a lot of people realize that, especially with movies, at the heart of every storyline is something simplistic.
Yep. And
there's almost always a primal urge there to connect with us on some subconscious level.
This is why Avatar was so well received by the general public and so poorly received by the hardcore critics.
Yeah.
You know, because the story was simplistic, it was basic. But I mean, It was madness as far as action scenes were concerned.
Mech suits versus giant space panthers.
Yeah, and I mean, I would have said Halo by James Cameron, but like Peter Jackson said, I don't need to make a Halo movie anymore because James Cameron already did it with Avatar.
And I mean, even if Cameron's not a gamer, and I don't think he is.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
I think he's a little bit old for that. I can honestly, as knowing that this is a guy who read the same type of cheapy science fiction novels I did when I was a kid, you know, the type of guy, so I forget hearing interviews with him where he talks about some of the stuff he's read.
Somebody
who used to worship the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, you know,
I still think he would respect that source material.
He was all over that 60s and 70s sci-fi boom. I mean, that was his bread and butter. You know, Lucas
the guy,
had his...
The guy was one of the spearheads of the big anime push in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. He's a huge anime fan. But I think Mass Effect is just, like, it shares so many qualities with Cameron, like, you know, that clean, pristine look.
A space battle against a giant mechanized lobster.
Yeah, you know, it even feels, you know, like the first Mass Effect, the action sequences and stuff in it even feel like a Cameron movie. You know, like they just got that vibe.
The soundtrack, the score sounds like Brad Fidel.
Yeah, you know, I think it'd be a perfect match. I don't think it'll ever happen. And I know there is talk of Mass Effect being in the works and all of that sort of thing. I'd love to see it as a trilogy of movies done really well, you know, like no budget wasted and no concessions made to script. And I mean, I know BioWare still control it, so they're not going to let it just, you know, they're not going to let David O. Russell rewrite it and have Mass Effect.
You don't take BioWare's Northern Bounty.
No, you know, like it's David O. Russell is not going to make it about a bunch of space diplomats who...
A
family of space diplomats who travel from school to school teaching, you know, mass physics and fighting robots.
No, the bad guys wouldn't be the robots in David Russell's Mass Effect. It'd be the ugly-looking rock pig aliens.
Oh, the rock pig aliens, yeah. Okay, there we go.
I forget what they're called. Grunts race.
The Krogan.
The Krogan. That even sounds like an evil space race.
But yeah, you know, James Cameron, Mass Effect. All over it.
Sweet. Any of our listeners out there who got their own ideas of what type of game would make a great movie and who you'd like to see make it, even who you'd like to see be in it, by all means, hit us up at the forum boards over at The Verdict.
I gotta say, the one thing I did hear on Mass Effect, like early on, they were talking about Matthew Fox being rumored to be cast as Colonel Shepard.
Yeah?
That would be awesome. I'd be all over that.
We talking about Matthew Fox from Racer X, Matthew Fox?
Yeah, from Lost, Matthew Fox, yeah.
That's a guy kind of... I think he did quite a bit to shed his Party of Five stigma.
Yeah, Commander Shepard. You know, the first human Spectre. I think he'd nail Shepard. I think he'd be a perfect...
Actually, he kind of looks like Boxart Shepard.
Yeah, he does. He kind of does. He's got that vibe for sure.
He doesn't look like I know he doesn't look like my Shepard's a woman.
Oh, you played with Jennifer Hale Shepard?
Yeah, I played with Jennifer Hale Shepard. I know you played Shepard O'Shaughnessy.
Yeah, I did. I kind of customized my Shepard.
Yeah, mine. But my female was customized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She still had Jennifer Hale's beautiful, sweet voice.
Nothing wrong with it.
My vocal goddess. Actually, no. My vocal goddess is the English girl from Dragon Age.
Oh, Liliana.
She makes anything sound classy.
She's
Morgan.
Oh, Morgan. Morgan's pretty awesome too. Oh, Claudia Black.
Yeah.
Also from Uncharted 2.
Oh, yes, she was, too.
Mm-hmm. Chloe.
Little English minx.
Oh, she was awesome. So cool.
You said we got one last segment you want to toy around with?
I've got one last little segment we're going to throw at you people. We're going to see how it goes for this week, see if we actually hear anything back on it. I think it's a good idea. We're essentially, we're going to rip off David Letterman. We figure enough people have been doing it over the years. Why not jump in on it? In order to stick with my own little invented RPG theme, this is what we call the Top 10 of Righteousness, plus 2. It's the only Top 10 list with a level 27 requirement.
And plus 2 Righteousness.
And plus 2 Righteousness.
Orcs hate it.
It glows blue when orcs are near.
Yeah, orcs hate the stuff. What's our Top 10 for this week? Our Top 10 plus 2
for our this Top week? 10 of Righteousness, plus 2 this week. Top 10 things to get the kids for Christmas because you can't find that damn Kinect sensor you've been looking for
anywhere
at all. And because it's top 10 plus 2, number 12, a time machine set for 2006, back when Microsoft made games.
But what model time machine would you choose? There's so many out there. Would you get the DeLorean model? Guy Pearce's time throne? Van Damme's time-apult? Big choices.
Time-apult? Yeah.
You want to get thrown screaming into a wall? With a really crappy CG ripple?
There, but then when you wake up, hey.
You fall into a river.
Games.
You fall into a river clutching a copy of the first Gears of War Collector's Edition.
And Oblivion.
Was Oblivion 2006?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was early 2006, that's right. Yes.
Summer 06. A nice 401k package or health insurance.
Dude, that's totally not cool. Our American listeners are going to have the verdict blacklisted for us talking about our commie-free Canadian healthcare.
Number 10. A Nintendo Wii and a copy of Zuzu Pets.
And hey, at least one of those things should be easily found in the Walmart bargain bin.
Number 9. A picture of the Kinect sensor and a copy of Minority Report on DVD.
Because you don't have to rearrange your living room to enjoy Tom Cruise.
And hey, he's got those fancy gloves that you can pretend that you're, you know, playing Kinect.
Call you on the phone. Chief Anderton, I don't understand. What am I seeing? And you got to run out your front door.
Number 8. An actual pet tiger cub. You can even name him Skittles.
Just remember, tigers love pepper. They hate cinnamon.
Number 7. One of those boring lectures where we explain that in our day, Microsoft Kinect was called playing outside.
But just be sure to tell them all about playing in the snow with only one shoe and a log on your back, uphill, both ways.
Number 6. A gym membership, complete with free consultation with a personal trainer.
I have the former. It's fantastic. And I go out drinking with my personal trainer. I really don't think he's qualified for his job.
Number 5. Music they can dance to.
Yeah, dancing would be cool. We never got to dance when I was a teenager. Local preacher had it outlawed after the rock and roll music killed his son. But Kevin Bacon took it back just in time for prom, though.
Number 4. A pony.
I got nothing to add to that, man. Ponies rule.
Number 3. A PlayStation Move. It only does everything, but sell, apparently.
Ah, the rainbow wave.
Number 2. Call of Duty Black Ops. Because it's what all the really cool kids are playing this year.
Losers like me. I'm still playing Borderlands.
And number 1.
1-1-1-1.
A Nokia N-Gage. Because there are probably more games available for it than we'll ever see for Kinect. And it's about as much fun.
Who can argue with that?
That's it for our top 10. That's it for our slightly remodeled blast processing. If you got any feedback, feel free to drop us a line. Let us know. Let us know what you think of the new ideas that we're kicking around. Let us know if you like the rundown. Let us know if you like the top 10 of righteousness.
Let us know if you like Ransylvania.
Ransylvania is important as well. We want to know. We want to know all of these things because, hey, we're experimenting. Experimenting is fun.
Guys, I promise it'll look better with a coat of paint.
It sure will. It will. And that's coming. That's coming with time. Until next week, you can find us in all the usual places. You can find us on DVDverdict.com, in the forums, the jury room over there. We've got our own little blast processing section. You can hit us up, leave some comments, leave some feedback. You can leave some feedback right below this post by, clicking the...
Add comment.
The add option. Comment button. And you can add a comment. We'll read it. We may respond to it if we can ever remember our logins and passwords. Until next week, we are blast processing. And be sure to tune in when you will hear John say,
Dylan! You son of a bitch!
We are out of here.